Welcome to Galactic Chat. I'm Helen Stubbs, and today I'm interviewing Australian horror writer Rebecca Fraser. Welcome, Rebecca.
Hi, Helen. Thanks for having me on Galactic Chat.
It's a pleasure. Now, we met in 2010 when we won places in Write That Book, a year-long course with Louise Kuzak run by the Gold Coast City Council. Rebecca inspired me to start writing short stories, and she has a long list of published shorts. She's also worked as a freelance writer for the professional world, and she works in social media. Now, Beck, primarily you're a horror writer. What is it about horror that you love?
Good question. And it's not always an easy one to respond to, because people sometimes, if they're not into the genre themselves, make assumptions about lovers of horror.
Yep.
But basically, I'm just a light-filled person that's curious about the darkness in all of us. And I think I've always been drawn to horror, even from a really young age. So when I was a little girl, I started off with a diet of European fairy tales. So I had all the Grimms and the red and the blue fairy books. And I guess from there, it was really just a natural progression into the more adult forms of horror. But I remember when I was younger, my father used to run an auction house.
Yeah.
And one day he came home with a box of books, which was a pretty regular occurrence, because a lot of people would hand in, lots of books, and if they weren't sold, Dad would just bring them home and would go through them all. And he'd give most to me, but this one particular box, he pulled one book out and suggested that it would probably be a more suitable read when I was older, and he put it up on a shelf so I couldn't reach it. And I was probably about 9 or 10 at the time, so of course at the first opportunity, I pulled it down.
Did you need a chair to climb
I up? Did need a chair, and I did.
Good work.
As out of reach as he could. So, yes, there was a chair involved in the crime.
Maybe it was a setup. Maybe he wanted you to find that, get that book.
You know what? It wouldn't surprise me with my dad. My dad's an avid reader as well, and I think she was probably trying to nurture something from a young age as well. But this particular book, it was called Deadly Nightshade, and it was an anthology of horror shorts edited by Peter Hanin, who was he was a really talented editor. I think mainly in the 60s and 70s, he used to put some really quality anthologies together. It was all new territory to me, as a young girl, and it featured all the greats, so Bradbury and Block and Starkey, Emma James, Algernon Blackwood.
Do you still have the book?
I do still have the book.
Oh.
I was utterly smitten, and I still have a book to this day. It left such an impression on me. So, yeah, that was probably my early foundations drawing me into my love of horror.
You got a taste for it, and you kept on reading and then started writing. And were you trying to write horror at a young age as well?
No, not so much back then. I think I first started writing horror maybe in my early teens, I guess. But
that's
I think
still that, pretty young, so that's...
Yeah, but it was...
Cool.
I guess a lot more innocent sort of horror back then. But, I remember that book particularly, I probably drew the greatest inspiration as well, to this day, from some of the old masters from the turn of the last century that are in that book. And what I love about the way they write horror is it's just so elegant and understated, and they really knew with horror, but it's better to leave things out than to put them in. So,
Is it the suspense? The suspense,
yeah.
And the fear of what you're not quite...
Exactly,
know. Yeah.
And I think you just get a more unsettling result for that. The power of suggestions in horror has far more impact than the in-your-face sort of variety.
Yeah.
There's a market for that as well, of course, but... But anyway, so why do I love horror? Stephen King actually once said that we make up horrors to help us cope with the real ones, and I think there's a lot of truth in that. I think, though, at the end of the day, I probably just like to be scared.
Yeah, that thrill of being afraid, going on a roller coaster or something.
Yeah, we got it.
Now, you mentioned to me earlier that you're doing a master's in creative writing. What are you learning about there, and what are you trying?
The master's has been great, actually. I'm doing it through Macquarie, and I'm in my second year at the moment, so halfway there. And we've covered a lot of different areas, so different narrative techniques, different literary devices, and then putting different literary theories and concepts under the microscope, which has been great. And discipline-wise as well, it's been good for me.
Yeah.
So I can be a bit of a lazy writer at times, I suppose, so deadlines for me seem to get pretty productive. The other thing it's encouraged me to do is branch out into other genres. That's been good for me as well. It's allowed me to stretch myself more as a writer. So I guess I've always been a dark, speculative girl, but I don't want to necessarily pigeonhole myself as such, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you like to be more versatile and...
Yeah. And I think doing the tertiary study and just being exposed to assignments where I have to be challenged to do that sort of thing, I've actually found it's really fun to dabble in those other areas, so that's been a real bonus.
And are there a lot of other horror writers in your course?
No, there's not, but I think they're all used to me by now, so we do a lot of work.
Do you read each other's work? And
yeah, we do. So, yeah. But we've got a couple of sci-fi purists, so and there's a couple that write fantasy, but then there's a lot that like a sort of, I guess, well, a lot of genre writers, so crime and young adult and all that sort of thing, and then a few of them all.
And are they all mixing well? Are they helping each other? And
yeah, and I think it's really interesting to get, because we workshop each other's work, it's really interesting to get feedback on your work from people who aren't necessarily well-read in your genre.
They maybe have a fresh approach.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's been really interesting as well.
Yeah.
And likewise, you know, reading and critiquing in other genres has been good for me as well.
Now, about a year ago, you left us on the Gold Coast and moved to Victoria's Mornington Peninsula. I'm trying to forgive you for that. Apart from missing the ibis, what effects has the move had on you as a writer and your writing?
That's another good question. I do miss the Gold Coast. I miss my ibis. But, it's beautiful down here. And, yes, environment does influence my writing to a degree. So by that, I mean some landscapes and settings will inspire a short story and kick-starting that noise in my head more so than sometimes a character or a premise will. So down here, it's been interesting because there's all the little things that you notice that being a Queensland girl is all new. So just little things like changes in the air as winter approaches, and because we live near the Port Phillip Bay, the sunshine catching the bay in the early morning, or they had very red sunsets down here, like really crimson sunsets.
Ooh.
Things like the leaves in autumn. So yeah, setting does play a big part in my story for sure. And it's funny where that sort of inspiration comes from. So my parents live in Tasmania, so I visit there pretty often.
Yeah.
And Tassie in itself just is stuffed with stories, from its history to its landscape and the people there. There's a lot of different characters that live down there. So I've written a couple of stories set in Tasmania. I've got stories set in far north Queensland around the Daintree area.
I wonder if some stories would only work in certain environments, like, or I guess the landscape can enhance them, like the cold or the red sunset. That sort of adds something to a story, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I think a sense of place in a story can be as commanding as the characters themselves. You can almost have that as like a character in itself, to have like such a distinct setting or sense of place or landscape. But I think, you know, even everyday Australian suburbia is such a fabulous environment our suburbs, our cities, because they, like, as far as horror goes, they really lend themselves to dropping the unfamiliar into familiar settings. A lot of my stories are equally, as well as having, you know, very distinct landscapes or places, I also have a lot of stories that are just about familiar, everyday, run-of-the-mill suburbs, play areas.
So as I was going to ask, you see the potential for horror all around us.
Yes, definitely.
It's just a matter of unearthing that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, there's potential for horror all around.
Did you ever find anything, dismiss an idea as too ghastly to pursue?
There's two things that I find really abhorrent that I would classify as off limits for me, and that would be child abuse and animal abuse. So as far as an idea too ghastly, that would be it. I'm not saying that you wouldn't ever find mention of those things in my work, but it would certainly never be objectified or condoned. But I'm not so much into the splatter, gore, talk porn style of horror either. It's not that I find it taboo or it bothers me per se. It just doesn't appeal to what I find beautiful about horror.
It's elsewhere to the suspense side.
Yeah. So, to me, I have a preference more to, the suspenseful side, the psychological side. Like you were saying about potential for horror all around us, it is. And I think the way of the world at the moment is the real horrors there, you know, on a global scale on the 6 o'clock news every day. And I think that's why that Stephen King quote I mentioned earlier probably resonates with me so much.
Yeah.
But, you know, like most writers, I'm a shocking eavesdropper and sticky beak. You know what I mean by that.
It's all research.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, snatches of conversation translate into a story idea, or, you know, you can be in the supermarket and that, you know, the person up the aisle from you pushing the trolley filled with nothing but ice cream and cat food becomes a character, or a story develops from, there's horror all around us.
Absolutely. You know, someone keeps peeling the oranges in my my fruit drawer in the fridge, and I just keep thinking of that character in the Dexter books who, like, peels off people's skin. It's like, what am I living with here? The skinner of oranges.
Someone's stealing your oranges.
Yeah.
That's creepy.
Yeah, it is a bit freaky, isn't it? It might be for an innocent cause. It might be for cocktails or something.
Cocktails. Nothing innocent about that.
So you're a founding member of Prana Writers, GC Speckies, and then Sci-Fantor from afar. And last year you served as a committee member for the Australian Horror Writers Association. What is it that draws you to writing communities?
I guess I really just enjoy spending time with other writers and like-minded people. But it's not just that as well. I think getting together with other writers helps keep me on track with my own writing goals. So, you know, you get motivation, inspiration that comes with that, and the creative energy that goes with a group of people that are, you know, all on the same page and all striving towards the same goal.
Excited, you know, about writing and...
Yeah, excited about writing, sharing ideas, sharing, you know, works in progress, sharing any issues they might have with their writing. I think, the energy that comes from that's fantastic. I think the other benefits of that as well is, like I was saying about the masters, like critiquing of works, that's always great to have as well. And I've learned heaps from having my work critiqued and critiquing the work of others.
Is that one of your preferred ways to learn about writing?
I guess you could be right in that, Helen. I hadn't actually thought about it like that, but it's certainly, to read people's first and second drafts and then, you know, be a beta reader for a finished work as well and have others do the same for me. You know, people that you trust, people that you respect as writers as well, to have their feedback is very good. And I find that often another set of eyes will, you know, as far as the editing process goes, whether it be a structural edit or a line edit, will pick up things that haven't occurred to me. So that's always good.
Great.
Yeah. There's a lot of different personality types that come together in a writer's group, though, so it does make for some interesting dynamics. But generally, writers are usually lovers of coffee and wine, so that works well. Yeah.
Have you done any online workshopping or critiquing, or has it mostly been through people that you meet with physically as a group?
Mostly it's been through people I meet with physically, but with that said, with the Masters has been doing a lot of that as well, so that's all been done online. So,
right.
Yeah. But one thing is I haven't established a network down here as yet, so it's really something I miss, being part of a tribe, so to speak.
Yeah.
So if anyone's listening to this and they live on the Mornington Peninsula or surrounds,
Rebecca needs you.
I need you. So if you want to get in touch for writerly shenanigans, do so.
So what's coming out for you in 2014?
This year. I've had a couple of shorts published this year. One appeared in the Quarry Journal earlier this year, I think January.
Yeah.
It was a good way to kickstart the year. And then I had another story, Coralesque, that appears in the recently released Undertow, which is the Gold Coast anthology. And I've got a piece of flash fiction called Heartbeat that's coming out in Antipodean SF, but that's in September, so later in the year. Yeah, but I've got quite a few things submitted out in the marketplace at the moment, so I'm playing the, you know, the waiting game.
Yes, acceptances are wonderful, but how do you deal with rejections? Are they just water off a duck's back, or...?
More so these days. I've got, like, a ream of rejection letters, so...
Yeah.
They don't bother me so much as they used to. I think it's... what I especially enjoy about rejection letters is if the editor has taken time or felt that your story is worth supplying some sort of feedback. So that's always a bonus if they say, you know, they might offer some generous feedback in how to improve your story and resubmit it to a different market. And that's happened quite a few times now and has resulted in a sale elsewhere. So that's been really good. No, I don't get too beat up about rejection letters. I think rejection letters mean that you are actively getting your work out there, so hurrah. It also means that I can look at improving that piece.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes, obviously, it might just not be a good fit for what they're looking for. That's fine. So I think the thing about rejection letters is not to let them bum you out. It just means that you're doing your job as a writer and... get it back out there in the marketplace, get it back out there with a, you know, a market that's going to be a good fit.
Great.
And, and play the waiting game again.
Yeah. So what are you working on at the moment?
At the moment, just uni assignments, really, which sounds boring. I've got a mid-semester break just a couple of weeks away, so I'm a bit under the pump with deadlines at the moment.
Yeah.
It's all creative work, so, you know, it's all good and it's all things that can be developed down the track into something submittable. But as far as other work goes, I'm working on a few shorts at the moment to submit to some themed anthologies.
Yeah.
And I've also got a YA fantasy manuscript on the go. Yeah, actually just talking about what we were touched on before about setting and sense of place, young adult work was inspired by the landscape of the Mornington Peninsula. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I've always noticed that in your work, that the landscape and environment is quite important in your stories. Were you going to read a little of that for us, or what? I did ask you if you might like to read something.
Probably not of that, because it's still in vomit draft today. So... badly written, cliche written mess at the moment. So I won't let anyone be lead with that. But
don't subject us to that. I'm sure it's great.
chat. But
what would you like to read for us then?
I can read a bit of flash maybe. I've been really dabbling in a lot of flash fiction. That's one of my big joys in writing at the moment. So I could read a bit of a dystopian piece that was actually published in issue 10 of Pluto magazine.
What magazine was that?
Pluto magazine. It's a new publication, and it was in their Wage Slave Orgy edition. So they're a literary magazine that Doghorn Publishing puts out, and they specialise in the dark and the twisted and the just plain weird. So
wonderful.
Yeah, this was their dystopian themed edition. And I had a piece of flash fiction published in there that I think you would have actually read before and offered some feedback on, so you might recognise it.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's called Just Another City Night 2086. Yeah. Do you want me to
please
read?
Please do.
Okay, so yeah, it's called Just Another City Night 2086. "Give it to me," the peddler said. He held out an open pile of a crease of leather. "Please," wheedled Jagger, hating the pathetic line of his voice. "I gave you one last time." The peddler merely held his hand out. "It's too much," Jagger said. "The price is too high. Please be reasonable. I already gave you one. You can't have another. I'll pay you with coin next time. I'll pay you double." He knew he was babbling, but he couldn't help it. The cruel fingers of withdrawal were squeezing his heart, his windpipe, his soul. Soon the shaking would start. The peddler said nothing, waited. Jagger knew he would do it again. He wanted to cry for what he would do, cry for himself, but the tears wouldn't come. The Sartek had eroded his ducts a long time ago. The shaking, he could feel it spasm his knees where it always began. Soon it would work its way upward, and he would be rendered helpless, racked with pain as withdrawal possessed his body. "Act now while you can still use your hands," the peddler smiled. Jagger moaned in horror and defeat, his hands already trembling violently, roped in his face, his fingers dug and gouged as he secured the peddler's payment. He detached his remaining eye from its socket and thrust it blindly in the general direction of the peddler. The peddler wrapped the lengths of optical fiber neatly around the leaking orb, taking care not to fuse the ends together. He placed it in the pocket of his leather trench. The peddler threw a packet of pale blue Sartek at the twitching, howling form of Jagger and stalked off into the night.
Wow. Gripping.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like flash fiction and micro, and I really think it's a fun medium to work in. So, yeah.
Yes. It's a very satisfying little piece.
Thank you.
So now you're working in social media. Can you share some tips and advice with us about using it as writers?
Yeah, sure. It's such a broad area and a big question itself because of all the different forms of social media that are available. But writers tend to favour Facebook, Twitter, and of course blogging. So I guess from the standpoint of marketing your work and your brand and sending traffic back to your website, if the objective is of sales and exposure, I'd recommend for Facebook users to have an author page alongside their personal page.
Yeah.
Which a lot of writers do at the moment, of course. And the reason mainly, there's a couple of reasons, but obviously, first of all, your personal page is personal, so your author,
close friends and family, and though I notice a lot of authors do have other authors as friends.
Yes, absolutely, and that's why I love social media, because I don't have my writing network down here. Like, thank God for social media, because we're all friends of each other, and there's, you know, scores of writers that I've never met in person that I'm friends with on Facebook, and that's awesome.
Yeah,
but I think if you're going to have your business as, you know, your writing as a business,
yeah,
your author page is going to be part of that marketing and business toolkit. So it's always good to treat your writing as a business and be professional, and then have that author page as your branding for yourself, and keep your personal page for your you know, your duck face selfies and your pictures of your duck face and your cat's verbals and, you know, your vents and your rants that we all like to do, because your author page will be a landing page, probably for all your friends as well, but also for readers, those that are following your industry moves. And if you look at your author page as a marketing tool, social media, when you use it as a marketing tool, is cyclical. So all streams feed off each other. And it's an interesting thing, because social media is also hard to quantify in terms of results or success. So you can gauge it through, you know, your number of likes perhaps, but...
Or your hits or...
Yeah, exactly.
But does that translate to sales or...?
Exactly. And that's the hard thing with social media, because you won't really know what impact that's having on your sales. But if you have calls to action that are geared towards that, then you can certainly speed that up. But, yeah, if we're looking in terms or thinking in terms of marketing strategy, then try and think of your website as the hub that you want all media streams to lead back to. So whether you've got your Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn or your Google Plus or, you know, whatever streams of social media you're using, if everything sort of eventually cycles back to your web page, then if you look at it as a business generation or sales generation, then that's a cyclical part of social media, and that's probably the objective that you'd be looking at with your author page as well. So I know a lot of writers who hate the side of the business of writing, but I do think a solid social media presence is as important a tool in your kit as anything else as well. Sorry, Helen, I could digress about this all night, but I probably...
It's interesting. Sometimes, like, I really like to know sort of the personal information about writers as well. Like, I guess I don't just want to see them as a writer with a professional face. So do you think that personal info, like your cat's furballs, that's maybe a bit too gross, but does any of that personal sort of stuff have a place on the professional author page or not?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I think, you know, keep it, there's nothing wrong with letting your personality shine through.
Maybe keep it tasteful or not too...
I'd keep it tasteful and I'd keep it uncontroversial. You know, if you have controversial views and opinions and everything, then let them rip on your personal page, absolutely. But
I'd sort of say, unless that's part of your brand, like I think some authors have a controversial sort of brand, don't they?
Yeah. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, you've got to be comfortable with what you're doing as well. So if you're comfortable with that, then absolutely. And I think it all comes back to your level of comfort and your level of comfort with social media.
Do you have a preferred part of social media? Like, do you love it, or is it okay? Do you like to get away from the computer when you can?
Yeah, it's for myself, it's funny, because even though I work in social media at a corporate level, my own social media is pretty low key. So I mean, here's me spouting on about author pages, but I don't have one. But
that's good to hear. I don't think I have. Mine's not very good. So.
Don't hold me up as a shrine and example, folk.
Do as I do.
Yeah, that's it. But I tend to be not so huge on Twitter. I know heaps of writers love Twitter. It's just a medium that I don't engage with very much, but then when I am doing social media for businesses, then, yeah, Twitter and Facebook, definitely LinkedIn. But, again, that's, yeah, not so relevant in the writers. But,
interesting.
Yeah, so just getting back to that I think because I do spend a lot of time on it, it's nicer for me to get away from the computer sometimes. And the other thing as well is a big tip for writers, as every writer that's listening to this or will probably be able to relate to, it's the biggest procrastination tool. If you sit down to write, then you've got your social media going.
You mean we should actually be writing some stories instead of like...
It's just too easy to...
tweeting look. For now.
Yeah. And that's one thing I've had to train myself to do as well, is get off of Facebook, start writing words.
So true. I have to work on that one myself, I think.
We're all guilty, I reckon.
Yeah. Well, that's all our questions. Thank you so much for talking to us, and good luck with everything.
Oh, thanks, Helen. Thanks so much for having me on Galactic Chat. It's been great.